Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I'm your host, Vincent Trewell. My special guest tonight, hopefully, is familiar to many of my listeners, but I'm certain not all. From the Penny Royale podcast, I am pleased to welcome Nathan Isaac. Nathan is a podcaster extraordinaire, an investigator, researcher, and more will come tumbling out as we talk. So, welcome aboard, Nathan.
Oh man, thanks for having me on tonight. I'm excited to talk to you about all this stuff. So,
Hey, this is really something I've been looking forward to for a while and probably should have happened before, but let's do it right now.
let's do it,
So,
man.
for those who are not familiar, Nathan and his partners, who I'm blanking on their names right now, but it'll come up, have done two seasons of a phenomenal podcast called The Penny Royal, and it focuses on the area where they live. Which is in Kentucky, and a specific part of Kentucky, that is a term area termed the Penny Royal, which is in Pulaski County, Kentucky, and is focused around the town of, and well, Nathan, you tell me.
Yeah, so the Penny Royal is sort of the I guess it coincides a little bit with what would be termed the like the Cumberland Plateau area, but it runs from the Appalachian Mountains in the east all the way west to the area where like Mammoth Cave is located, and then north to around Lexington where the Bluegrass region starts. So it's this little triangle of a plateau. And yeah, we are located in Somerset, Kentucky, here in Pulaski County. And yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. I've been talking about this with in relation to Pennyroyal, but for another project too. Just the fact that where this place is, it's so uniquely situated, not just because the region has karst, which is the water has eroded the limestone caverns beneath us, and so the landscape is very pockmarked, and there's lots of sinkholes, and it's a pretty interesting landscape. But at the wet to the west of where we are is the Mammoth Cave system again, and that's the same region too where the Hopkinsville Goblin encounter occurred, which is on the western sort of tip of the Pennyroyal Plateau. But where Mammoth Cave is, when you think about it, that's the largest cave system in the world, right? And then on the eastern,
In the world, in like the entire planet Earth, yes.
entire planet Earth currently that we know of, right?
Yes,
There
yes.
could be more, but in terms of like what has been discovered, what has been mapped, it is the largest cave system so far that we've found. And on the eastern part of the Pennyroyal is obviously the Appalachian Mountains, right? And those are the oldest mountains, the oldest mountain range in the world. And then sandwiched between those two things that are themselves so fascinating and interesting is where we are, which is Pulaski County, Somerset, Kentucky. And it is Pulaski County coincides with the largest spike of geomagnetic field energy that's coming up from the lithosphere, the crust of the Earth, and it is the most energetic geomagnetic energetic point in North America. There are three really big spikes. Sedona is the second largest, and then there's another one in southern Alaska, but the one that's here that's called the Kentucky Anomaly, and it was identified by NASA a few decades ago. The biggest push of research came out in 1982, but they don't know what it is that's beneath the region that causes it. There is some type of deposit, but there are it's the Kentucky Anomaly. It's so strong that it creates these gravitational anomalies here as well. And those are covered extensively too in separate papers. But yeah, it's just it, to me, thinking of it that way, where it's like sandwiched between the largest cave system on one side and the oldest mountains in the world on the other side, and then this massive spike of geomagnetism. It's strange, you know, it makes this place a strange place. And there's just so much more, you know, that we found in researching this place and really using this as sort of our, I don't know if I would say laboratory, but sort of it's, you know, we, so much of the podcast, so much of Pennyroyal is focused on understanding the relationship between people and place. And, you know, it's just becomes a big part of like the way we look at the world, but the way we look at this area. And so I think a lot of the things we've learned about researching and diving into the folklore of a place and collecting stories and seeing why a place is the way it is, but also how that place has made the people the way that they are. Somerset and Pulaski County and the Pennyroyal at large, but definitely this place, you know, Pulaski County and Somerset, I couldn't think of a better place to really dive into all of that.
It is absolutely fascinating. The things you've dug up in more ways than one are really, really interesting. And seems like a truly unique place. But you're not originally from there, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm not. I had the luxury of coming here and then finding all these things. But I'm from Eastern Kentucky, from the Appalachian region, Magoffin County, and I grew up. You know, my dad coal miner. My mom was a teacher, a librarian at the middle school. So, very blue collar family, and grandfather was a fire and brimstone Southern Baptist preacher. So there was a lot of like apocalypticism and crazy stories of demons and, you know, the end of the world and, you know, all that stuff. So that definitely colored a lot of my, you know, perspectives on things, but also just grew up around lots of stories about haints and ghosts in the hollers and graveyards and did my fair share of like old school, like not with like equipment or cameras or anything, but just like some of the older adults taking the kids out to the cemeteries. And I just think that's where I caught the bug, was when I was really, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old, you know, through my teenage years, getting taken by my aunts, my cousins to go get scared, you know, up these crazy hollers. And you'd hear these stories too. And it's like, looking back, I don't know if any of them were true, but they were great to hear. And they just really, really just set that fire inside me, right? To go out and find places and find stories. So, but yeah, I moved from there and went to college at Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky, which is like the horse capital of the world, bourbon country, right? And but I loved
Well,
going to
and
train.
if I can butt in, Transylvania University, besides the name, which is, come on, man, I've wanted to get one of those t-shirts for a while, has some interesting things that happened there too, didn't it?
Oh yeah, So, you know, Kentucky used to be called Transylvania, right? And it just really means through the woods. I loved going there just because of the, it's a private college, very small. There were like 900 and some students in the college, but I loved it because it was called Transylvania. I thought that was funny and kind of weird, just in light of all the paranormal stuff. But it is one of the oldest colleges in America. And has been around since the 1700s. And some interesting characters like Constantine Rafinesque, who was an early polyglot explorer. He was a professor at the college. He taught there, but he was the one that mapped the mounds, the Edina Mounds in Kentucky and Ohio. Did a lot of crazy stuff there. His body is still interred there, and there's some, he has a crypt. So there was a crypt on campus, right, with Rafinesque's dead body supposedly there. And the other thing that's really interesting that was at the college that I didn't know about at the time I was there, I wish I had known, but there's a special medical collections or special collections at the college that includes a sample, a preserved sample from the infamous Kentucky meat shower. That fell in Olympia Springs in was it 1896 or 7-ish, and so, you know, meat rained down from the sky, well documented in the newspapers, and there is a sample of that at Transylvania University, which I very much would like to go take a look at. I have not had a chance to do so yet, but I would like to.
That is fascinating. That is one of the most Fortean things that you can have. That's not even fish. That's just hunks of meat falling from the sky. That's tough to match, let alone top. That is a fascinating story, and I want to make sure the listeners got that, that some pieces are kept,
Yeah, man, that's what it's, there's probably no way for them to test it now because I think they, I don't know if it was in alcohol or the way it's preserved. I don't think they can pull DNA on it. I think in the original story, they said it tasted like mutton,
And yes, people ate it.
right?
Yes.
Yeah, picked up this
Fell out
meat.
the sky, it's got to be good.
Yeah, right. Manna from heaven, right? But yeah, that was a strange story. And I loved going to college there, but I thought that I would not go back to a small town and ended up meeting my wife there. And she is born and raised from Somerset, Kentucky. And I was like, hey, let's move back. And we started working with her, got a job down here working with her family. And the rest is history. I, ended up stumbling on all this weirdness. But, before that, I was already researching a lot of like strange stuff. I love strange stuff. But,
Oh, yes.
and Fortiana, right? But it was cool moving to a place that itself really had a long history of Fortiana.
Oh, yeah. If I can just go back to Transylvania U for 1 second, there was also a really weird crime that happened there involving the theft of some rare books and
Oh yeah,
attempting to
dude.
fence them, and they made a movie about it, is the only reason I know about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie. It's Mr. Pink. My wife actually went to college with those guys.
Oh,
Like
really?
she was in college. She was at my wife went to Transylvania University too. She is a bit younger than I am, and so we weren't in college together, but I was still up in Lexington when she went to Transylvania University, and so we had that commonality, but she actually was in school at this. They were those guys that pulled that heist. It was some very rare books that they tried to sell th through what's the big auction service up
Oh,
in New
wait,
York?
like Sotheby's,
Yeah,
maybe.
Sotheby's. Yeah, and Sotheby's is the one that called the FBI, and there's a big investigation. The guys are still, I think, in prison. One of the guys
That would
is.
not surprise me because it ended up getting violent. It was a bad
Yeah,
crime,
dude,
but
it's crazy. They made them. I still haven't seen the movie. I still haven't seen the movie, but it is that happened there. And then also, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but there was a murder, a really like famous, not famous, but there's like a murder in the parking lot where the campus is. There's the dorms. There's like a circle. It's called Back Circle if you go to college there. I don't think it's there anymore. I think they've actually changed it. But when I was in college there, it was some of the original lodging. I stayed in the actual
oh,
dormitories
yeah.
that were there, been there for a long time, not since the 1700s, but they've been there since this happened. So back in the 50s, a woman was found strangled to death with her bra in the parking lot right there in Back Circle. And that's when, and they never found out who did it. But it's one of those crazy, violent murders that happened, that
And
the
just
police never
remained
got solved.
unsolved for to this day. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that story while I was there, but honestly, it was when I was researching stuff for Pennyroyal, I actually came across that story. It just wasn't something that I'd heard. There was a story of a girl of a haunted area of the college, but it didn't relate to this part. It was something else, and so coming across that, I was looking at like top 10 strange murders in Kentucky or unsolved murders in Kentucky. And that was one of them, and I was like, "Oh shit! I didn't even hear about that when I was, in school." So yeah, Transylvania is cool. It's a very cool college, and with a lot of history, a lot of history.
I believe it. I believe it. So you end up getting married and moving to Somerset, and how long, or how did you come to realize there's something unique about Somerset?
Well, again, I was like, I didn't want to move back to a small town. Ended up down here. I'd found the Kentucky Anomaly stuff before we moved down here. We were still living in Lexington, and I'd come across some of that stuff. I didn't at the time connect it with Pulaski County or Somerset because I knew my wife, was from here, but I hadn't really looked at a map or, it wasn't something that was important at the time, other than, well, that's interesting, and oh, that's centered on sort of South Central, Kentucky. And then we moved down here, and really what kind of got me started, I was looking for UFO sightings down here, and had found, just because it's like, is there anything interesting to check out, or does anyone see anything strange? And I'd found reference to what's known as Alien Grave Mountain, and there was a guy that had a website, and he purported or told everyone that there was a 1963 UFO crash in Burnside, Kentucky, which is just outside of Somerset. And Somerset's located on Lake Cumberland, so it's a big tourist hub. Has been a big resort town for I guess since 52 or 3, whenever they built Lake Cumberland. But Burnside was one of the towns they flooded. They moved the town, but down there, there's this place that's called Alien Grave Mountain, and this guy would give tours of the crash and of this alien technology, and he had all these cameras set up that he was live streaming. But if you went, you could pay him to take you on the tour, and he would drive you in this really big limo that he owned, right? And
Wow.
he had made this sort of like route up on this mountain. I found it finally. The website went away for a while, and I eventually was able to track the guy down. And he's sort of an elderly guy now, but that was one of the first things that I found here that I thought, man, that's weird. That's a weird thing about this place.
Yeah. Was he implying that there was an alien buried there?
Yes, yeah, that
Okay.
there
I
was
mean,
an
it sounds,
and that
the name
the
is what it sounds like.
oh
Okay.
yeah, dude, he had a crypt. There was like an alien crypt out in the woods. He had part of the wreckage. There was petrified shit. It's fascinating. That just Google Alien Grave Mountain and in parentheses, and you'll find some weird stuff. So,
Oh, I bet.
but honestly, in earnest, what eventually became Pennyroyal, originated because I'd seen, I was on my way home, and I had seen a group of people protesting down in sort of the town square with signs that said, you did it. And I didn't know what they were referencing or why they were there. And when I got home, and obviously my went next door to my neighbor, we were having some coffee, I brought it up, and she had mentioned that it was because it was the family of Linda and Cody, Linda Gibson and Cody Garrett, who had been murdered here in town. And so it was a really strange murder, and it's tied sort of deeply into the folklore of this area and of Somerset. And so I was very intrigued by how strange the story was. There was a suggestion of a cult, which there's no cult here, but it definitely was part of the narrative. And that honestly set me off to look a little deeper into the town and Pulaski County and its history. And then I just opened up this crazy can of worms that just keeps delivering weird stuff. The more we dig, the more stuff we find. And it's kind of incredible that it's all in this one place. And
It does
that's what
seem kind
got,
of like the center of the spider web for a lot of stuff.
yes, man, yes. And that's honestly, it's like the fact that it coincides geographically with the Kentucky anomaly, right,
Yes.
is what makes it even stranger, because it's like, are all of these weird things that are sort of centered here, like exactly like you said, they're like the strands of a spider web, and this is sort of the center of the web. It's like, why do they all converge in this place, and is the anomaly somehow associated with that?
All that energy and maybe forms of energy we don't even understand or know about seem to be coming out of, well, out of whatever's under the earth itself that affects people and makes things happen in some way or another. When I first heard you talk about it, this is a couple of years ago, and the first thing I thought of, and I don't know if you've read this or not, it wasn't the most popular, but Stephen King's novel, The Tommyknockers. Had this spot in an otherwise fairly rural environment where a bizarre meteor had crashed like thousands of years ago, and it emitted this energy that caused people to have psychic experiences and caused some people to lose their minds. And it immediately reminded me of that, though it would be naturally occurring.
I didn't know that the, I mean, I've seen the AB, like I think it was on ABC. It was one of those like movies made for TV movies about that was Tommyknockers, right?
Oh, okay. I have no idea how well they did it from that movie.
Terribly, I'm sure. I mean, it was like a
The
made, it's made for TV, so I'm sure it's pretty
check
bad,
cleared, so King was okay, but
he, right? I mean, he got paid for it, and I'm sure it was, this is back pre-internet, you know, so and pre-streaming, but yeah, I think that was Tommyknockers. I don't remember so the meteor is a central part of that
Oh,
story.
yes. It's like ancient. Nobody knows it's there, but it gives people psychic experiences, and it's not good for anybody's sanity. And the closer you are to where it landed, the more it affects you and the weirder you get. And it just seemed to tie right into some things that had happened in Somerset due to maybe all the quartz and everything that's underneath there.
That's so fascinating, man. Well, I mean, obviously, too, the other side, you know, the other thing that, or one of the many things that's happened here is the crash of the Cumberland Falls meteor back in 1919, right? So,
Oh,
like,
speaking of meters, yes, please.
yeah. So we know that here in Somerset, that a 54-pound chunk of this meteorite that struck this area and set all the stuff on fire, landed here. They recovered that. It's in the Smithsonian, right? But they know that that was only a small chunk. So it's like a meteorite that was larger than 54 pounds struck this area, struck Pulaski County somewhere, and it was never recovered. And that's what, you know, in the first season, we're interviewing Brian Simmons. Who was a local radio guy and local personality, and he had had some meteorites from it's the Geminid meteor showers that he thought had kind of come down on his roof, but that sort of spurred this whole discussion of meteorites and the like Cumberland, I'm sorry, the Cumberland Falls meteor, and he's the one, you know, that mentions like, maybe there's a meteorite. Yeah, maybe that meteorite's here and it's drawing people in. And it's like, well, what if that is the source of the Kentucky anomaly? You know, we don't know that. They don't know
Exactly.
where this thing is at. And they know that the Kentucky, and I think they detected the Kentucky anomaly. What the like I said, they published the research in 82. I think it was the 70s when they had the Magsat satellites that first recorded it. So it's like, it could have happened in 1919, right? We don't know that the Kentucky anomaly's been here for thousands of years. It could have only been here for, you know, 100 years. I don't know, but that is, that's so fascinating. I didn't know that that was the premise, the underlying premise of the Tommyknockers. Now I'm gonna have to
Yeah,
go back
it's, I
and
mean,
read
there's,
that.
of course, you know, it's part of it, but yeah, that's the key thing. And if you get close enough to it, you become like a genius, but you also go insane. So it's, it seemed to
Fascinating.
parallel a couple of things that may have come
Yeah.
up, you
Yeah.
know.
That's cool. That's really, really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting kind of, you know, linkage there. But yeah, I remember the very beginning of Pennyroyal season one, and starts with this guy, and he's got these meteorites that landed on his house, and it almost seems like they're sucked in there, sort of, or something. You know, it is really interesting. That both seasons covered a lot of ground. It was, you know, and it's tough to even get like a, well, in a nutshell, describe this. Well, you can't really, because it all connects and all kind of snowballs into something else. And, you know, there's a lot there, but it is really interesting. Anybody who hasn't listened to both seasons of Pennyroyal, you need to go listen to this by any means necessary. Okay. It is real good. Absolutely hooked me from the first episode, and I had to hear it all. And there's another season coming up, is that right?
Yeah. And thanks, man. Thanks for saying that too.
Oh, no problem. I totally, yeah.
But yeah, so
And
the third season's coming out. I mean, there was a lot that we covered in first season and second season. First season, I think, was more Somerset focused, and then second season it was kind of like, if you've been on the ride with us this long, we're going to go a little bit deeper into some of the theories and some of the more esoteric parts of it. The third season, it's kind of a mixture of the two. I've gone back and interviewed a lot of local people and really dove into a little bit more of the history and the folklore of Somerset. And then, I mean, there's still quite a bit of, interesting, it's a sprawling story. There are a lot of connections unexpectedly to some bigger narratives. And some of those in parapolitics, I guess we would refer to it as parapolitics, but there are a lot of weird political machinations that center on Pulaski County, but and Kentucky in general, that are tied to larger narratives with the CIA. But Hal Rogers, which is one of the most powerful Republicans, this is his hometown, and there have always been, big money exchanges with private contractors. What is it? SAIC. A lot of military contractors are here, oddly enough. And then plus you got Mitch McConnell, the other super powerful Republican who's stepping down soon, after many years of being in power. He also, is tied into this region, with Hal Rogers. So it's always been a big, sort of political stronghold. There was also John Sherman Cooper, who was one of the most famous senators in U.S. history. He was on the Warren Commission. There's a lot of connections between Somerset, Pulaski County, and the JFK assassination. So,
And that's an amazing thing that people really don't know. And, hey, I'm from Wisconsin. We're flyover country too. But people don't really have a clue of how much takes place in Kentucky. And I had no idea. And how much linkage there are with CIA operations, with real parapolitical deep state. And I don't mean that in a catchy way that is the last couple of years, but a real deep state, events taking place, and how much of that happens there and has happened in the past. It's amazing. There's things you wouldn't, at least I would have never thought of,
me either, man. I swear to God, I was like, this is crazy. Like, all the weird stuff is like by itself strange, but then you get into the CIA connections, the stuff to the Bluegrass conspiracy. Like, Somerset is directly connected to this pretty big story that's been covered by lots of other researchers. But Ted Shackley and the CIA, the Iran-Contra drug running from Vietnam, the CIA laundering money through the coal mines. This is research from Gary Webb. Like, there are a lot of people that, I guess the only thing that I've done is find a lot of these different stories and then link them together geographically, and they all line up over this one area. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yes.
these stories are all out there independently. You can read the Bluegrass Conspiracy, you can read separately Gary Webb's The Coal Connection, and the list just goes on and on of different stories, but it's like they all crisscross in this one place, right?
And
Where all of these weird anomalies are.
just to butt in, for those who are listening who may not be up on this, the Bluegrass Conspiracy was a, for lack of a better term, kind of a cartel of drug runners, but the catch is the drug runners were all in law enforcement and the military. So the people who are supposed to be stopping drugs found a great second side hustle of running drugs in mass capacities, in large amounts. And that went on for decades. I mean, a long time.
It was a long time, and if you've watched the film, excuse me, if you've watched the film, Cocaine Bear, that recently came out,
Okay.
that is connected to the Bluegrass Conspiracy. The plane that crashed that had the cocaine that the bear ate is one of the planes that the mastermind Andrew Thornton was flying. He leapt out of it, but he had too much cocaine and money on him, and ended up
Wow.
his parachute didn't hold. So, but you know, I mean, that also there are many connections between, which I, again, it's like I've always been enthralled by the Danny Casalero story,
Oh,
and
yeah.
obviously Ken Thomas's The Octopus and all the research into that, you know, before I even came, you know, moved down here to Somerset. And then, you know, during the course of all this, we uncover, you know, one of the strange twists in the second season is finding, you know, Chuck Hayes, Charles Hayes, Chalmer Hayes is another name for him, but he was involved in the whole Promise software stuff. It turns out that you know, Hayes is really the phrase "the octopus" comes from Chuck Hayes here, and it's in the newspaper here, in the Commonwealth Journal, a full 5 years before Danny Casalero even starts to investigate the octopus. And there's an interview with Chuck Hayes, and he got busted smuggling gemstones into the U.S. from Brazil, which he alleged was payment for the Promise software, you know, that was used to spy on all these governments. And then Danny, you know, he's called to testify in the Inslaw case. Danny Casalero is looking at this. Charles Hayes becomes one of his main sources of information. You know, a week before Casalero was found dead, there's records that he was calling Charles Hayes. And so, you know, 5 years before that ever happened, before Danny looked at that, in this newspaper article in the Commonwealth Journal, Chuck Hayes literally says that this is much bigger than what anyone can imagine, and there are many, many arms to this octopus, right? And I
Wow.
absolutely believe that Hayes was the one who ended up giving Casalero that name, you know, or
Yeah.
what he phrased as the octopus. I haven't seen the so you know, obviously Netflix just released the Octopus Murders: American Conspiracy. I haven't watched it yet. Have you
I
seen it
think
yet?
that just came out in the last few days, so
Yeah.
I'm dying to see that myself.
Yeah. So I don't think they mentioned any of this, and apparently they really rip off Ken Thomas's, you know, he ends up writing a book about Casalero's research and calls it The Octopus, and I don't think that they paid him for it, and they kind of take, you
That's
know,
pretty
take it in a whole
ballsy.
other direction. But yeah, that was weird too, though. It's like, you know, not only were we finding these connections with other people's work, you know, like Sally Denton's The Bluegrass Conspiracy, and then we found the connections to Gary Webb, who was murdered for his research regarding drug dealing too.
Yes, if I can just butt in for a second, Gary Webb, broke the story. Now, this is my understanding. He broke the story out in California, where he was working as a journalist, and he broke the story that the CIA has been allowing the mass importation of cocaine and allowing cocaine. It used to be that crack cocaine was for very rich people, freebase, but it so much was put in supply and demand, it became very cheap and became sold in very poor areas. And the crack epidemic of the 80s, that if you're close to an adult as the 80s, you remember just being disastrous. It was a disaster for our country, and millions of people were affected. A lot died. A lot died in prison from going to prison for a long time, and just destroyed communities all over the country. And it happened so that the CIA could get money to finance an illegal war in Nicaragua. The Iran-Contra thing was part of it, and it was how to get money when the government said you can't have any money, and they had billions. It was huge. And the guy who, Gary Webb, the guy who broke that, was run out. It was, his career was destroyed. His family was destroyed. They made a movie about this. Is it Kill the Messenger?
I'm trying to remember. It's
There's a
the
book called Kill the Messenger. I think they made that into a movie, which was fairly well adapted.
Dark Alliance was the book, which is his, yeah, that's his whole crack epidemic. That's what got him killed,
Oh,
yes,
yes. Well,
was the,
now we're talking about the guy who committed suicide, right?
oh no, you're talking about Danny Casalero. Yeah, that so there's Gary Webb is the he wrote The Coal Connection, right? But he also wrote a book called Dark Alliance, about the CIA and some of the drug running. And then Casolaro, who committed suicide, in West Virginia, and did the octopus stuff. It was the same stuff. They're all covering the same things that were happening, and
Yes,
they, you
yes.
know.
I got the name switched up there, I guess. I'm thinking of the guy in California who broke
Yeah.
that and
Yeah.
was later
That's it.
found.
Yeah. That's Dark Alliance. It's Gary Webb. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess they wrote a book about him called Kill the Messenger.
Yeah, of course.
And he is said to be a suicide, that he died of suicide, but he did shoot himself twice. And it does seem to take a lot of intensity to pull the second shot,
Yes, it's it, that's yeah, dude, that's right. This is it's two gunshot wounds to the head. It was ruled a suicide.
Yes.
What the fuck? Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened. Maybe he did shoot himself twice, but that's got to be awfully rare. And then
Well, I
Danny
mean, think about that too.
Casolaro's alleged suicide has always been very problematic, that wasn't even possible for him to kill himself like that.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
it seems that he very likely was silenced.
And it's crazy when you think about that too. It's like both of these guys were writing about from different angles. Sort of obviously Gary Webb was covering the crack epidemic, and then Casolaro was sort of covering the banking scandals, right? So it's like Webb was looking at how the drugs were being used by the CIA to fund these wars, and then on the other side, Casolaro was really tracking down how the money was being laundered, right? Through like BCCI and some of these CIA banks. And it's crazy that both of those people were looking at that story and ended up dying in
Yes.
incredibly like it can't be a suicide way, and yet they were both ruled suicides.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of Americans can't see it when it happens here.
Yeah.
When that guy is killed in prison in Russia, everybody knows what happened. We know Putin had him killed. That's what happened. There's no doubt about it. If the same thing happened in Iran, nobody'd have a problem believing that the government just had him killed. What happens here? It kind of disappears into the ether and it was suicide and he was a troubled guy and yeah, it goes away. Nobody pays any attention to it.
Right. Frank Olson, man, he just throws himself out a window.
Yes. And for those who aren't picking up the reference instantly, I did a thing called Wormwood about that, about a really good independent documentary called Wormwood about Frank Olson and why he very likely was killed and what he was covering up. And it goes way beyond LSD experimentation. There may have been a lot of other experimentation too, but that's for another day. We've kind of got our hands full just with Somerset, Kentucky, because so much does go on there and ends up being the nexus point. So just if you could give us a little bit on Chuck Hayes, kind of like he seems to have a thumb in everything, but how did he what well if you just kind of briefly give us his story with the whole CIA thing.
Yeah, man. I mean, again, it's just one of those unexpected, like in the first season we found Alexander Guterman, Mr. X, right? And
Yes. Oh, I was going to ask about him too. Yeah.
I'll just really quickly, Guterman ended up being this guy that they called him Mr. X in the New York Times because no one knew where he really came from. But he showed up in the early 50s and committed the largest stock fraud in US history to that date, was involved in the overthrow of the Dominican Republic. He's been tied to the JFK assassination, all kinds of like crazy, crazy things. And he ends up buying a mine in, of all places, Pulaski County outside of Somerset, called the Mount Victory Coal Mine. And he bought the mine from a what I would argue is a corrupt, allegedly corrupt attorney here in town named Lester Burns Jr., who has his own story. The books have been written about him called Dark and Bloody Ground. That's for another time, but infamous character. And his business partner, which we ended up finding, who also owned the mine, was Vice President Spiro Agnew. And those two men sold the Mount Victory mine to a gentleman named Alexander Guterma, who was known as Mr. X, right? And so that mine has figured, the Mount Victory mine has figured heavily into the local folklore here. I've interviewed people that allege that there was strange cult activity there. Again, I don't think that's the case, but what's weird is that the mine itself, it coincides with the peak of the Kentucky anomaly, right? There are two peaks in the county. Like the county itself is really the center of it, but there's a peak in the northeast and the peak in the southern part. And the one in the northeast, right on the edge of the Daniel Boone National Forest, right? And that's where so much of the weirdness that's been happening, especially here geographically, is centered. So there was Guterma. He's tied into so many strange things. He ends up dying in a plane crash that probably was an assassination. A lot of strange things there. I was like, there is no way we could possibly find anything weirder or stranger than this guy, right? And then while I was working on production season two, somebody messaged me and said, "Hey, have you looked at Chuck Hayes?" and sent me the article about the jewel heist, right? Or the uncut jewels being smuggled into the US from Brazil. And boom, it was just like we opened up that box, and it was just a deep rabbit hole of this character named Chuck Hayes, who supposedly was a junk dealer here in Somerset, Kentucky. But he alleges that he was a CIA agent, and that he was the CIA agent or CIA contractor that flew Castro to a meeting for the UN in New York City in 1959. And that is actually from other researchers. That's not from me. Hayes says it's true. And says that he was that pilot, but there are other books that have been written, and they list this, Chuck Hayes. The CIA has repeatedly claimed that he is not a CIA agent, that he is just a crazy junk dealer from Somerset, Kentucky, right, from Nancy, Kentucky, in Pulaski County. And even though they've said that, he alleges that he was one of the salesmen that sold the Promise software that Castellero was writing about, and that the Innslaw case centers on, that this company built a management software for cases in the court systems, and that could also be used for some sur not surveillance necessarily, but it was mainly for like criminal files, and they sold it in various countries. So that they could put all their case files and evidence in court and stuff. And then also their banking, it was used for banking information too. And lo and behold, it had a back door that had been built in by the CIA. And the only reason we know about this is that the CIA decided to stiff the Innslaw Corp and not pay them their final amount. And so they sued the government, and this case came about. And in Chicago, while they were having the Innslaw case, they called Chuck Hayes to testify. And when he came to testify as a CIA agent, the government was like, he doesn't know anything. He's a redneck junk dealer from Pulaski County, Kentucky. And he takes the stand, and they enact the National Security Act. We don't know what he testified to, but we know that he knew something, and the government doesn't want us to know what he said.
And the
That, and
one
he,
time, yes, this guy is saying he's a CIA agent. Everybody's taking that completely of no value. And then it's the feds that invoke the National Security Act to silence what's the word? Seal whatever he's saying. So he was able to testify, but nobody can know what he said.
And he had his CIA number. There's a deep rabbit hole there in terms of what he was connected to. But he is what, like, when you wouldn't think this guy would be from Pulaski County, but it turns out that he is this storied figure on the conspiracy forums from the early 1990s. Supposedly he had a relationship with Bill Clinton. And there's just all these stories about him. He supposedly was the leader of the what was called the Fifth Column, which was a group of CIA white hat hackers, and they supposedly took the Promise software and used it to hack the corrupt U.S. senators and force them to retire. They also, there's a story that he supposedly built and sourced from his junk dealing and buying ex-military surplus items, that he supposedly built a Cray supercomputer here in Somerset, Kentucky, that he and his group installed in the back of a semi-trailer, which they drove around
I was hoping that was going to come up. Yes.
the country
This is
or
off
the
the
county.
chain.
Yeah, man, it's crazy, you know. And there's like an X-Files episode that has like this supercomputer in the back of a semi, you know,
So it
and
couldn't be
that all,
traced because they're driving it around and.
yeah, and it's like, you know, coincides with this story. So he, you know, I don't know if that's true, but definitely he did buy. You know, that's one of it's part of his legend. It's part of the stories that were passed around, you know, in the early conspiracy forums on, like, you know, Usenet. You know, he's one of the stars sort of that era. But the other thing that's kind of crazy is that he did buy this decommissioned software from the government, from the FBI. He ends up getting a copy of the Promise software, at least one of the versions that he used, from the FBI, from a computer cell. And the FBI tried to get the software back. And I honestly think that he didn't just happen to buy this. He knew that this software was going to be on those servers and sought them out and bought it and was able to recover. He knew that they did, when they delete these computers, wipe the computers, that it's not wiped. And he was able to get the software off there and use it probably in the way that was alleged, right, to do some of this stuff. But the FBI ends up raiding his farm, and this is absolutely well documented in the newspapers and court records. The FBI came and took the computers back and did a full raid, a full SWAT FBI raid
Oh,
on
yeah.
this guy's farm, and he ends up suing the government. It's a crazy story. I tried to get if these FBI files, I referenced exactly the case, all these things, and the FBI told me that they could neither confirm nor deny that those documents exist and that I couldn't have them. So, but Hayes eventually gets convicted, like right after this, supposedly gets set up by the government. This is how the story goes, that he's trying to hire a hitman to kill his son, and he ends up being convicted. Spends the rest of his life in prison and ends up dying in prison.
Oh, wow.
And we were able to finally locate where, you know, where he died. But I've tried to get the CIA records. Also, they were basically like, "We'd be glad to give these to you if you can produce his death certificate." You know, and I was like, "Okay, cool." But again, it's like there's just so much there. I mean, I could do a whole podcast, you know, with 8 episodes, 10 episodes, just about Chuck Hayes,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
It's such a fascinating story, and there's so many other characters that are centered around him. But again, here he is in Pulaski County, in the same place that all of this other weird stuff is going on. He's not even connected to those other strange things, and then but he is connected to Casolaro. He's connected to the octopus, and I do believe he's connected to all of the bluegrass conspiracy stuff that, you know, that went down here. When season three comes out and everybody hears about the Butcher Brothers and the banking fiasco and all that stuff too, I just think people are just, it's unbelievable to me, but it's all documented very well and separately from anything we've ever done. It's just, again, it's like you find all this stuff and you lay it all on top of each other, and it all intersects here.
Well, and that's one thing that you really do bring on your research and everything. This isn't speculation. This is not guesswork, and it's not one person on the internet referencing somebody else on the internet. You know, researchers, quote unquote, referencing researchers. This is stuff that's been in the papers. This is stuff that's been in the court record. This is things you've and you've been quite prolific with this, doing Freedom of Information Acts. with Muckrock and getting the documents, which can be, I say from firsthand experience, quite a difficult endeavor to get things out of the government, but you've gotten a ton, and that really backs up, what you're saying. It's fascinating.
It's really, I didn't encourage anybody to, if you're interested in this type of research, these type of stories, and really, piecing some of this stuff together, Muckrock, and it's a great service, like $40 a month. You can file, I think, 20 or 30 FOIA requests, and man, they make the system really easy to use, and they track everything. So I've decided to stop, like, trying to do FOIA requests on your own is not the way to go.
No,
Definitely
it's
switch it over,
not.
and because if using a service like this, ever since I've used it, it's just been fantastic, and I've not looked back on just trying to, mail FOIA requests.
Yes. I guess I'm kind of looping around here a little bit, but your job is in data mining, is it not?
The day job is in the automotive industry, but Darian and I have done a lot of development there, and so it involves the software that we've built for the automotive industry involves a lot of data mining of VIN numbers and like automotive parts stuff like that. And then he and I have also had a lot of experience prior to just the day job stuff, doing some app design and development for some companies in New York and some other people, and those projects have also involved data mining and dealing with large amounts of data. So yeah, we've had quite a bit of experience with this kind of stuff, and it's been nuts developing that software concurrently with this research and doing this research, because we've been able to build these models. He's set up all kinds of great ways for us to be able to parse and process. I mean, it's a lot of when you're dealing with this many documents and so many people and places, and it's like there are connections from these people, and we've really, Darian's just, he's brilliant, and he's been just very successful at developing the software that can help us find connections, find links between documents. He's developed a software called Nautilus that we've used quite a bit. And now for work too, we've gotten into LLMs, the large language models, and AI development with a lot of the software that we've been working on, and applied that to these documents. Built a JFK GPT, which we've been working on feeding documents from the JFK assassination into it and seeing what patterns emerge. We've used it on the Downard documents, the Downard research that we've done has been great. The Gutterma, that was the first thing we tested it out on, was when we got the massive trove of Alexander Gutterma documents. So yeah, it's to me, that's what's really exciting is using these new technologies and using, because anyone can get into this stuff. Learn a little bit of Python, especially with these GPT models that are code assisters, and you can, Python's a simple language. It has all these libraries built just for data mining, and man, you can really put it to use, looking at this stuff and making connections. So I don't know. I just feel like it's going to get easier and easier to find the documents we're looking for,
Oh yeah, that is the greatest application of that technology, that can catch things that it would take so many people so long to sift through, and it can just, deliver it to you and say, "Hey, look at this." And that's fascinating. Is your like tech career how you got interested in cybernetics?
No, I mean, actually, no. It's
Okay.
the cyber. I mean, I'm cybernetics is absolutely fascinating to me. And I, up until I started working on Pennyroyal, I think my conception of cybernetics was simply what most people's I would assume is associated with the Terminator, right? That it's a man and machine killing robot. But when we were doing the research, honestly, it was Steven Snyder. Recluse brought up the MACI conferences, right? I'd never heard of the MACI conferences.
Same here, same here. He really dug down on that.
Yeah, and it's like he mentioned that to us. It connected to some of the people we were looking at through the Pennyroyal research that were tied to Pulaski County. Once he told us about the Macy Conference, it was just like boom. You know, we started looking at Weiner and some of the early guys that were the sort of the founding individuals in that movement. What's his name? Shannon, you know, that created the Shannon entropy and information theory. It's just a whole host of people that I didn't know existed. And we started looking into it. It's like so much of that ties into, you know, the idea of synchronicities and magic. And I don't know, man, that was a whole rabbit hole too, that I never expected cybernetics to be so informative and so tied into to really the framework of this story that we were finding, right? And so much of it is, you know, it's that idea of, you know, people in place, but also the way that we interact with stories, the way that we interact with folklore, it's also cybernetic, right? And again, it's just, I don't know. I think it was always there, waiting to be found, but it wasn't something I even knew to look for until that moment, you know. And it really did it. It was Stephen that was like, "Have you taken?" And so many times, so many parts of this story and this journey of sort of discovery, looking at these things and finding these mysteries, has involved someone saying, "Hey, have you looked at this?" And then it's like just an explosion happens, right? And all of this stuff just reveals itself, and I don't know, man, it's amazing. But yeah, that's really where the cybernetics part started, and I haven't looked back, and it continues to be probably one of the biggest guiding concepts in all of this for me personally, right? Is this idea of cybernetics. And yeah, there's a lot of it in season three. It's three. I mean, obviously it's a running joke that we are always like, you know, it's cybernetics, right?
Cybernetic
But
synchronicities, yeah,
yeah,
there are a
man.
couple things that come up frequently.
Yes.
Other than the novelist William Gibson, you're like the first person I've heard connect cybernetics, connect tech, connect large amounts of information, and connect magic and, you know, beings that are non-human intelligences moving about in a world of information. And that's pretty fascinating, you know. It just kind of seemed to suggest itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it wasn't, I don't think we could have, I guess, say dreamt it up, you know. I mean, it really very organically emerged from the story, and the idea of like egregores and tulpas and, you know, thought forms and things like that. When you read about the principles of how those things have come about, it's very cybernetic, right? And then when you look at magic too, and the idea of like stacking synchronicities and creating these feedback loops, and so much of this involves feedback loops, even and then outside of magic, and you look at hauntings and encounters with high strangeness, right? So much of that involves these cybernetic sort of systems that emerge. And that's the thing. It's like it's not just cybernetics, it's second order cybernetics, right? It's like the system itself becoming aware of an observer, right? And that the system is watching the observer watch the system, and it becomes a series of feedback loops. And when you look at synchronicities and you look at high strangeness and all these things we've been researching, that is definitely like, you know, at the heart of it all. But yeah, it's something that just kind of emerged itself, I think, in reading about this and researching this. Information theory has become in network theory, information and network theory, because the things that are so magical about this journey, for me at least, and honestly, I think in terms of just like looking at this mystery, are the most paranormal parts are the synchronicities, are the ways these things seem to be connected together or entangled with each other. And it just like you almost have to use network theory and cybernetics as a tool to understand it, because without it, it's like, how do you even talk about this stuff without having some language to use? And one of the best things so far that we've found is cybernetics and information theory.
And one would, from the outside, might think that that is the least likely to be connected in any way with, say, Aleister Crowley and Thelema and things like, that you'd think that they're completely in different universes, and no, they're often quite entangled.
Yeah, that's what's surprising me. And I didn't have any hardly any experience with magic, or definitely not ceremonial magic, before really embarking on the Pennyworld research. And that to me too has been a really fascinating experience, and connecting with ceremonial magicians and practitioners of Wicca, and different members of the magic practicing community. It's blown my mind, and the fact that it is so much, whether technology is like what we would consider high tech, or technologies that are older folk technologies, right? They all share a lot of similarities with each other in form and function.
Yes, fascinating thing. Just to go back, you mentioned him briefly, and I can't let this go and not mention him, but James Shelby Downard. I don't think a lot of people know who that is or why he's famous. I was aware of him before I heard about him from you, because only because I used to read Paranoia magazine when it was still on the shelves at the bookstore. And they published some excerpts from Carnivals of Life and Death, I believe is his book. And my first reaction was just, why are they publishing the work of an obviously crazy person? This guy just has paranoid schizophrenia. That's the end of the story. Why are you giving him like 20 pages in the magazine months in a row? But it was fascinating stuff. It was just like, what the hell is this guy? The part I remember is he claimed that as a child he was, and he this goes into graphic detail, but he says he was molested by Alexander Graham Bell, the guy who invented the telephone. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? But please, tell us a little bit about James Shelby Downard, if you
Yeah,
will.
man. Yeah, this, I mean, this is one of those strange figures. I've always loved strange stories. So before even Pennyroyal, I'd come across references online to synchro-mysticism, right, and James Shelby Downard, but I hadn't really like gotten down that rabbit hole, like looked at the whole Downardian nightmare kind of stuff. But I knew who he was. It just seemed like one of those fringe things on the internet. But Downard is this really enigmatic, fascinating figure. He's definitely a controversial figure. Has been connected to a lot of racist rhetoric, and some fascist individuals, and Nazi individuals. So some of it's kind of hard to navigate, but he is this a character that at first we were wondering whether or not he was a literary invention used to disseminate propaganda. Was one of the things we wondered at first, but obviously it turns out that he is a real person. But it's this guy that his father was an asphalt engineer or inventor, and paved a lot of the roads in America. They've made a lot of money from that, and the family moved to Fort Thomas, Kentucky, which is south of Cincinnati. He ran up in Cincinnati, that area. Ended up coming down here about 20 miles away from Somerset to go to college at Danville, in Danville, right? But so Kentucky is part of his life. He ends up in St. Petersburg, but he also ends up just kind of across America. And the image of this guy, the story, the reason why people talk about him so much is this sort of myth that was born in the 1970s and 80s, of this arch conspiracy theorist in a suit with a 45 pistol on his side, driving across America, pulling an Airstream trailer, visiting all of these occult hotspots, right? And he's like this atomic cowboy figure. He talks about the first nuclear explosion, or the Trinity nuclear explosion, as an alchemical process, and gets into all kinds of occult symbolism, Freemasonry. Supposedly, he's being chased by the Freemasons. He's in a war with the Freemasons, and he pops up in a lot of different places. He was recorded by William Grimstead, who's also known as Jim Brandon, and Michael Hoffman. But Grimstead recorded a series of tapes that were referred to as Sirius Rising. Those were passed around in the conspiracy underground for a long time. The recordings were back in the mid 70s. They're absolutely fascinating recordings. And he ended up writing a text or a treatise that's come to be known as King Kill 33, which put forth this idea that the assassination of John F. Kennedy was somehow a ritual, right? A killing of the king ritual that had to happen. So that's kind of part of it that really grabbed my attention. And there are just a lot of overlaps with Somerset, with the JFK assassination, with some of these people. But he's tied into Grimstead, the rebirth of Pan. It's like a wide-ranging network or way that Downard is sort of has woven his way into the whole network of the story. I do think that he is one of these, what we've come to refer to as strange circuits, because it's like he is connected to so many different people and so many different stories, and it's all verified. I mean, like, again, this is all well documented, but like, he had a long, strange life. And was connected to a lot of things that you wouldn't think were true, or you would think that because he probably had schizophrenia, that some of it was, these were hallucinations. Turns out that a lot of it was real. And then the story just gets stranger. I mean, it's like all the stuff that's well known, when you go deeper into it, it's like really crazy stuff. But Rick Spence, Dr. Richard Spence, has written extensively. He's published one of the articles that was in Paranoia magazine. That's one of the first things that I read too, about Downard. And then Adam Gowrightly, obviously both Spence and Gowrightly are just really well known and really incredible researchers, and to me are some of the best ever, right?
Oh yes,
Just
absolutely.
absolutely incredible. And both of them have been gracious enough to be on, be in Pinnacle, let me interview them, but also just have been fantastic to correspond with and to swap research with. So for the last couple of years, Gowrightly and Spence, and we've gotten to work together on finding some of the Downard stuff, and some of the artifacts of his life, and try to piece his life together. Adam Gowrightly just published the second book, this is sort of the second half of Downard's life, the Chasing the Great Horror, or stop, sorry, Stalking the Great Horror, and which is the Lost Downard manuscript, which I highly recommend. If you haven't read it, if you haven't bought it, go out and get a copy. It is absolutely riveting and fascinating and weird. And then the original book was Carnivals of Life and Death, which was edited by Elena Freeland. And I had a chance to interview Elena Freeland for season three also.
Oh, very nice, very
So
nice.
that she's going to be in there. And yeah, man, it's just, he's one of the another one of these characters that is larger than life. And again, it's like, how in the world does this person exist? And why isn't more known about them, right?
Yes. Well, that's what I was gonna, when I first mentioned it, when I first read his stuff and first heard of him, I dismissed him, to be honest. But then, and one of the things I really loved about your research into him, things you would never expect to be true turn out to be totally true, documented. It's in the newspaper. It's, there's patient records when he was here, and there's different documents from the time that show, oh, he totally was there. And it's like, he is stranger than fiction. I mean, the stuff you would never believe to be true turns out to be completely true. And then you just have the stuff to like, Well, what else is true? If that was true, good Lord. He's a fascinating guy. Whatever all strings there are hanging off of him, it's amazing.
And that's, I think that's one of the things about Pennyroyal that's been so eye-opening for me, right? Is fine, like Downard, James Shelby Downard, or Chuck Hayes, Charles Hayes, or Alexander Guterma, or any of these people, right? It's like it's all stranger than fiction. And it's like, if this is stranger than fiction, then what else is stranger than, like, it's it and that's kind of what I have really, that has come to the surface or revealed itself to me, in the Pennyroyal sort of experience and the journey there, is that there, like, all of these things are simply evidence that there is something much deeper and much stranger going on deeper in reality than any of us can possibly understand, right? Like,
Absolutely.
there is high strangeness, there is weird shit happening every day, and we tend to just not see it or filter it out, right? Buffer it out. But like, when you dive into this stuff, it's just unbelievable how much evidence there is that the world is truly a weird and wondrous place.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Wanted to ask you about something that's kind of all tied up in all of this. And that is the year 1978 and the Kentucky anomaly and the state-of-the-art mental hospital that was built in the area right about that time. That's all kind of connected and comes out really weird. If you could just give us what you can briefly tell us about that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, so this was 73 is when Oakwood was built, right? And so between 1973 and 1979, these events were transpiring. But there was a, again, it's like, this is in Somerset. This is well documented. There was a, at the time, an experimental mental health facility that was built in Somerset. That was called Oakwood, and this is at a time that the Vietnam War was going on in 73, and people were coming back from the war. The state of the sort of mental health industry was in shambles, and so this experimental mental health facility was going to, show that things were taking a turn for the better. And so Oakwood was created. It was not your standard asylum sort of framework. It was built, made of various cottages. And it opens up in 73, and I think April of
And just to butt
1973.
in, that really was a time when this was, by all appearances, a really well-intentioned move to build modern mental health facilities in a way that had been really backward and really bad everywhere. I know it was really bad here, and I'm sure it was most of the country. It really, state of mental health was extremely backward. Now this was going to be a modern, done right facility.
And so, like, within 6 months of it opening, there was an anonymous letter that was sent to the governor of Kentucky, the state police, the mayor here, the chief of police here, alleging that there was a witch cult in the tunnels beneath Oakwood. And it's a really strange sort of looking facility. And again, it was state run at this time. And they were supposedly, this group, this witch cult, was burning symbols into the backs of some of the patients. And they were performing magical rituals in these tunnels. And so there was a huge investigation. They fire all these people. But I'd heard when we started to research, when I found out about that stuff, I was like, this is incredible, incredibly weird. And that there were these allegations of this witch cult. We start pulling research on it or anything we can find. Strangely enough, Hal Rogers was the attorney prosecuting the case for the com like for the state, for the county. He was the he was not a politician at the time. He was still the Commonwealth attorney, and was leading the investigation into this, which I would love to have these documents. I've tried and tried and tried to get these investigation documents. I've not been able to, but they end up firing all these people, hiring new people. But during the course of this, I'd found the son, the stepson of the man that took over as director after this scandal erupted. And he revealed to me that there was, according to him, but this has been backed up by other people too. Most of the people at Oakwood were lower functioning patients, right? But there was one cottage that supposedly had higher functioning savants in that cottage, and they were here from 73 to I think 81 or 82. But he had told me that. I thought that was kind of strange. He alluded to there being some strange things about these savants here. Then I'm talking to Dan Dutton, who's a very well-known Kentucky artist, but tied intimately into the Pennyroyal story, but he's the artist from here in Somerset. At that time, he was brought, this was 79. He ends up going to being asked by Oakwood to do some painting lessons with a group of special people there, and he's taken to Oakwood, and it's in this it's in the actual the recording of this conversation where he tells me this, and I couldn't believe that it came out. But it's like he had, oh, I've got an Oakwood story, and relates that he was taken there to teach painting lessons to these savants, and he was told that they were inhabited by these non-human intelligences, right? These extraterrestrial intelligences. It's very much like a Space Brothers thing that they were trying to save humanity. And one of their caretakers invited Dan to meet them and to paint with them. And he was taken there, driven there, and he was about to meet them and saw all of these people on their hands and knees eating popcorn out of the grass like horses. And that's the last thing he remembers. And then they were driving him back to his farm afterwards, and he had all this missing time.
Oh, wow.
And the caretaker and these people are telling me that there are these not nine non-human intelligences in these nine patients. But I've interviewed other people too, and I ended up finding out who the caretaker was. And yeah, I mean, I heard it from multiple sources that that this group of savants were there, not after 1982, they were no longer there. But I don't know. I mean, it's weird. It coincides, strangely enough, that all of that stuff happened with the witch cult in 73, but then also this group of patients that were supposedly being used as vessels or were channeling these non-human intelligences. That all coincides with when Alexander Guterma was out at the Mount Victory Mine. There were allegations of like magic and ceremonial kind of stuff happening then, but also a group called the Bait Cabal that were, members of the OTO, led by a woman named Nima. We know that she was coming to the Daniel Boone National Forest and performing rituals. She has a lot of they published the Cincinnati Journal of Ceremonial Magic. That's where they were located at, was in Cincinnati. And they
Which
mentioned,
has
she
its
mentioned.
own ton of rabbit holes there that we
God, there's
don't
so
begin to
much.
have time for. But yes, a very
So much
special place
stuff.
too.
Yeah. And but they were coming down to, because they mentioned something called the Cincinnati Vortex, which was like a portal that had been opened. And strangely, where she was coming to do rituals lines up where the anomaly is. So it's like, is the anomaly the portal that they were talking about? It's that has become a part of the story. But it's like all of those things happening, the stuff at Oakwood, ceremonial magicians, the stuff at the Mount Victory Mine, all were happening at the same place in the same area, and yet, other than the area, don't seem to be connected, which is weird, right?
It is indeed. It is truly weird. Wow. There is so much more. Some of us are bound by finite time, you and I. But yes, there's a ton of material here. And folks that are listening that aren't familiar with Nathan's stuff, the Liminal Lodge on Facebook, and the Pennyroyal podcast, 2 seasons out and one coming up as soon as really possible because we need this. But you need to get familiar with this because it's totally fascinating. It will blow your mind. I don't say that lightly. And also Dan Dutton's art. He's active on Facebook. He's a phenomenal artist and very much worth looking into.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here tonight, Nathan. And is there anything you'd like to tell people?
Oh, man, no. Thank you so much for having me on the show too.
Oh, my pleasure.
Obviously we've known each other for a while too, through, the Strange Realities and the lodge and everything. But yeah, I invite people to give the podcast a listen. Third season will is I'm trying to get it out by March, this month, but we've found a lot of new stuff and I've been adding a lot of things to it. So, but in the next few months, it'll definitely be out. And so check that out. And yeah, just give us a like and a follow. And if you come across anything weird, always send it our way. We're always looking for new weird stories. So.
And they find a ton of material. It's tough to match. But yes, well, hey, thanks again, Nathan. Folks, this has been The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Treadwell. My special guest has been Nathan Isaac from the Pennyroyal and from the Liminal Lodge on Facebook. You should look into that. Thank you for listening, and good night.